Good evening, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Cincinnati, Ohio, on Gulf Manor Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies. Sorry about the late start. Let's get right into it. We are continuing our study of Kings, the biblical book of 1 Kings. We're in chapter 5. And if you recall, we ended off last week at or around, roughly we concluded with the verse 10. And we said we were going to kind of end it over there, add around over there, and pick it up fresh the next week. So let's get right to it. Let's just review very quickly verses 9 and 10. We'll read that in the English, and we'll catch everybody up. So if you have 1 Kings chapter 5, please look to verse 9. God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceedingly much, and largeness of heart, as the sand that is on the seashore. Verse 10 in English. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the children of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. So, at this point, let's go see. I'll say that in the Hebrew. Vaterev chokhma shlomo mechokhmas kol b'nei kedem. The wisdom of Solomon was stronger, was greater, says that they exceeded, was greater than the wisdom of all the children of Kedem. And we said last week that it could very well be that B'nai Kedem, who knows, maybe that's an explicit reference to the children of Abraham. Because you recall in Genesis, as we said last week, he sent off his children, Kedem towards the east. And I thought that I heard somebody say that maybe that they dabbled in mystical arts, and maybe they got involved in what became known to the world as Hinduism. Who can really truly know? But at all events, he'd certainly sent his children towards the east, and they became famous for being wise people in the east. So these people, Shlomo was smarter than all those of Kol B'nai Kedem, all the children of the east, all the inhabitants of the east, Mikol Chochmas Mitzrayim, and also greater than all the collected wisdom of Egypt. This is one impressive man. You got to admit, that is really something. Let's go ahead and take a look and see what, if anything, we can glean from the commentaries. Take a look at Rashi in the original Hebrew. We'll read the Rashi. He was smarter, mechokhmas kol b'nei kedem. Smarter than the wisdom of all the children, all the inhabitants of the east. Mahi chokhmas b'nei kedem. So what was the knowledge of the people living in the east? Yodim b'mazalos. They were knowledgeable in the constellations. As we said last week, they're into astrology. Kedisa b'vsikta, the paraduma. Chol ha'parsha hazos nedresh Hashem lefi mashma. And this entire parsha is darshaned according to its mashmos, as we said last week. Greater than all the people in the east, they were learned, says over here in the field of astronomy. I don't know about that, but I think it was astrology that they knew, not such a hard science, and they were trying to learn things from the stars, from the from the positions of the stars. Okay, so that is the Rashi over there. So let's take a look at the continuation of the footnote on Pasuk 10. They were learned in the field of astronomy, it says, and in the language of the birds, as it is stated in the Psikta of Paraduma. All this chapter is expounded there according to the ordinary sense. I don't see any reference, quite frankly, at least our Rashi is missing maybe those magic words, the language of the birds. That's going to come up maybe a little bit later, but I don't see it in the Rashi in front of me. At all events, that's Rashi and Pasuk Yud in chapter 5, that the people in the east knew the astrological signs.
Well,
yeah.
The Rashi in my edition is Kiyom Mazalos V'chul.
Yeah, V'chul, right.
V'chul probably is. Yes. The mystic part from his source, yeah, of the victor, right?
Right.
So that is the reason that we don't have the words there most probably spelled out, because, I don't know, at some point, I'm questioning whether Rashi personally would have even had a B'chul, whether he would have abbreviated and left it to our understanding. Why would Rashi, who's writing his commentary for, you know, a wide group. And before the time of printing, books that were not, you know, anything less than the most standard, like Pesukta, for example, would not have been available normally to the average Jew. So if Rashi wants to tell us something from Pesukta, why would Rashi originally abbreviate? I suspect someone after decided to save the bother. I could be wrong, you know, copying it out. He figured the Pesukta is available. People can read it up on their own.
A good point. I hear you. I wish I had more to add to that. I think it's an interesting point. The Pesukta may not very well have been available back in the day, close to 1,000 years ago, if not a full 1,000 years ago. So why would Rashi have abbreviated? You would think that Rashi would lay it all out. Whatever the full quote is, he would just, list it. So if they're Yodin b'mazalos, and if they knew other things, then if it's there in the Pesukta, you would think, you know, list it, tell us. The Chule, it doesn't really help me a whole lot. What is it? What besides astrology, what do they know? So over here, we're being informed the language of the birds. That's what the editorial, the rabbis of the edits.
They
may have come across a transcript.
An earlier manuscript.
It is an earlier manuscript that would have said those magic words, you know, the knowledge of the birds.
Instead of abbreviating the Chule, Your point, that
they might have got. Who's they?
Maybe the editors, the rabbis who edited this book.
Journal.
Oh, right. Very likely. He's a one-man job.
Rabbi A.J. Rosenberg is doing this particular.
Very likely. I mean, yeah.
Could be.
Somebody was lazy. I mean, it could be a copyist from the 13th, 20th century. Some manuscripts often follow a bottleneck situation, something like in a genetic bottleneck, a hereditary bottleneck, where you have, let's see, any number of manuscripts of a famous classic text, religious or otherwise, and then at a certain point, virtually all the manuscripts either disappear or whatever, they're not copied. But, and like just about every manuscript from a certain point is copied from one manuscript of many, and then from that point on, all the subsequent manuscripts somehow are related genetically, in a sense, to that one manuscript, which is perhaps only one among many competitors. And sometimes you're able to verify it, and sometimes not.
Well, you see in the...
but I think I got something to add to this, so go ahead.
In the Archaeology, he talks about differences with different manuscripts of Rashi.
Saperstein, exactly.
That he'll say, you know, this is according to the Venice, or this is according to this one or that one. So he's obviously looked at different manuscripts of Rashi in compiling that.
Right. What I'm going to add is, if you see a few psukim ahead of ourselves, then you'll see that the Tanakh scripture here will say explicitly that Shlomo HaMelech did indeed know the language of the birds. And I'm going to point you, if I may, to verse Yud Gimel. So it could be that this is obviously the source. Maybe this is the source. I hate to say obviously and of course with definitiveness and all that, but if you take a look at verse 13 in the English for the moment, we're going to get to it tonight. He spoke of trees from the cedar tree that is in the Lebanon and to the hyssop that springs out of the wall. And he spoke of the beasts, Ve'al Ha'of. And he spoke of the fowl and of the creeping things and of the fish. Now, he wasn't talking to fish, but he did speak regarding these things. And I think that it became understood along the way, somehow, some way, that he didn't just speak about birds and how they act and how this one comes there and this one builds a nest. And he knew all this great scientific knowledge. But rather, it seems to me that along the way, tradition has it, that he became knowledgeable in the language of the birds and of animals in general. He was able to understand what they said. Vayadaber al habehema ve'al ha'of. Now, Parsha Pshat, it could mean that he spoke about, you know, scientific matters, you know, biology of animals and so on. And he could tell you a lot of things about the animals. I thought that, and maybe I'm just getting this from the Jewish press from back in the day, maybe that's my source, but that he actually understood when he would hear a bird chirping, he understood what that was all about. But in all events, maybe the pasuk in your gimel serves as something of a source for that psikta. Does anybody want to weigh in on that?
To me, it's obvious that it did, that they took it to a more, I wouldn't say literal way, but they took it in a more fantastic way than it was meant.
So they're just merely talking about the nature of an animal. Now he understands them talking to each other.
I don't know, because Rashi was talking about not what Shlomo HaMelech knew, but what the men of the East knew, the other nations.
I'm speaking about your gimel.
Right, but I think...
Who's the subject of your gimel?
That's
like
Shlomo.
Right, right. I understand, but I understood your question, and maybe I'm wrong.
Oh,
but
yes.
I understood your question,
yes,
to say,
what
was
the guys in the
gimel,
East know?
Was the gimel where Rashi was coming from on Pasuk Yud? And I'm saying I don't think you can extrapolate because your gimel is about Shlomo HaMelech versus what the people of the East knew.
I think that's a very fair point, and I thank you for pointing that out. So let's just make that clear. Mrs. Brewer is saying, you know, we're talking right now, this very moment, who are we talking about? The guys from the East, whoever they are. And what do they know? Well, let's review the Rashi in the English. Yeah. What was the wisdom of the children of the East? They were learned, and you see the Hebrew, Yodim b'mazalos. They knew astrological signs, the chule, and so on and so forth. And in our Tanakh from the Judaica Press, they add in the magic words, quote, and in the language of the birds. Now those exact words regarding birds are not actually explicitly found, but at all events, it's a reference to the knowledge base of those men of the eastern lands. They knew astrology, and they knew the language of the birds. And, of course, Shlomo knew more than that. That's where we're coming from. He knew more than the guys in the East, who were very impressive. Well, what do those guys know? Oh, my goodness. They know a lot. They know astrology. They know how birds talk. They know all the... They can figure out chirping. They're incredible, these guys. And Shlomo eclipsed them. So you're right. You're quite right, Mrs. Brolov. We're talking in that Rashi. The Psikta is talking about the guys from the East. And Shlomo bests them all the same. Okay, so Shlomo is extremely impressive. And he knows Mikol Chochmas Mitzrayim. He's even greater than all the collected knowledge of Egypt. And that's pretty great, too. Good. Rashi doesn't weigh in on that. Rabbi Brolov, the Radak is trying to help us out. It seems, if you'll please take a look for a moment at the Radak regarding B'nai Kedem, if you have the Radak, B'nai Mizrach, Hayu, Yuduim, B'chochmah, the children, the guys living in the East, they were well known. They were known for their wisdom. Chink Siv. And so it's written, Kimolo Mikedem. Ubedibre Razal, and our rabbis wrote, Ma Haisa Chochmas B'nai Kedem. So what was the grand, fabulous knowledge of the guys from the East? Shayu Yodim B'mazalos. They knew astrological signs. Va'arumim B'tayar. And how do we...
Clever and... Tayar, whatever Tayar is.
Okay, Pirish B'tayar, B'lashon Ha'ofos. And maybe there is our missing piece from the Rashi. That Varum and B'tayar, and Tayar means the Lashon of the birds. Achei V'chein B'aravi, Yikra'of Al-Tayar. And in Arabic, they call an oaf.
Yikare, probably. An oaf is called, yeah.
Yikare oaf, al-tayar. So there you have that word tayar coming up again. It's how I see him. That's how I'm potentially reading this Radak. V'chein b'nei Mitzrayim ha'yu yodim b'chochma, sh'v'ha'yu nekroim ha'chartumim. And we all know, famously, we all know about those wise men who were serving Paro back in the day in Moshe's time. So even back then, Egypt had a reputation for having knowledgeable people in the mystical arts and magic and so on and so forth. So they had a reputation. And Shlomo knew all that stuff and knew much, much more than that too. And so we continue on. We are fully impressed with Shlomo. Yud Aleph, but it gets even more impressive. And here it gets really, really unclear, because we're going to have to try to figure out the words of this pasuk. Vayechkam mikol ha'adam. Truth is, he was wiser than everybody. I mean, he knew more than every man. He was wiser me'esan ha'ezrachi. He knew more than Eitan the Ezraite. You got to bank these words for a moment. We're going to just translate very simply. Then we're going to drill down a little bit. Excuse me, we're going to drill down a bit and see what the Midrash has to say about these names. But at the moment, Eitan ha'ezrachi, he knew more than Eitan, and he knew more of a Haman, he knew more than that guy. The Chalkol, he knew more than Chalkol. The Darda, he knew more than Darda. All of whom, the name Machol, all of whom were the children of Machol. And these guys were well known to be smart people. We're going to see a little bit more as we go. But he shmo b'chol ha'goyim saviv. Truth was that Shlomo's fame, his name, his reputation, circulated all over the place very, very widely. B'chol ha'goyim, among all the nations. Now, let's go back and unpack a little bit and see what this pasuk may be getting at. This is really, really a fascinating one. We have a very extensive footnote here, so let's go take a look. All right. Vayachka mikol ha'adam. Says Rashi kimashmo. Exactly what it means. The ordinary sense means he was simply smarter than everybody. That's it. Case closed. Nu, Eson, Haman, Kalkol, and Darda, who are those people? Achin ha'yu, says Rashi, they were brothers. B'nei Zerach ben Yehuda, they were the children of Zerach himself. Zerach was a son of Judah. Famous, yeah, that's right, that Judah. Judah ben Yaakov. Judah the son of Jacob. Shenem, like it says in Divrei Hayamim, in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles, chapter 2, verse 6, U'v'nei Zerach Zimri, the Eson, Hayolavim Mishorim. You know, I looked it up late, and I got to give it its due. I didn't see the actual pasuk. Hayolavim Mishorim. They were Levim who were singers or maybe musical performers. You'll see that word Mishorim used not just as singers, but when it gets very sketchy to accuse people of being a singer, then I've seen that word Mishorim used as musicians.
Yeah, but how could somebody who paternally was descended from Yehuda be
a Levi? Yeah, you know, that occurred to me also, and I'm just saying that to, you know, make you feel good. I really actually did think that. I mean, what's up with the Judah and Levi thing? They were Levim, they were Judites, Yehudim, Levim. I got to confess that I'm a little bit out of my league over here.
Unless it's not from the tribe of Yehuda, but just a Levi
named Judah. Right here. Okay, but still, you know,
Zerach was known to be a son of Yehuda.
Right, and Judah was that Judah, I think, and that's the reason why it's going back. I mean, obviously, you have to see the pasuk in First Chronicles, and maybe we will visit it next week. Oh. But all of that, yes.
Right, at least how you and Levi and Mishorim is in parentheses. Maybe some goofers at some point put that in. Well, and we'll see if the Rashi continues that they were involved with composing Tehillim and so on.
Yes.
So they must have been Levi'im who were singing the Tehillim. We were singing it on the Mizbeach steps.
Right.
And but on his own. Then somebody else realized, hey, wait a minute. And that ain't proper. It's impossible to be Levi'im. But because of was it Rabbeinu Tamil, whoever said you never cross out, you erase things in Shlom Kedoshim, if you think they're wrong and you're right, so you put them in parentheses and then make a note in the margin. So that's why they were taken out in a respectful way.
Got it. Thank you. That explains it. That's good.
David HaMelech wrote Tehillim And he wrote to him for the Levium to sing at the base of the church. But he was not a lady.
Right.
True. But watch in a few minutes. We're going to see these names coming up as authors of Tehillim. And
but that doesn't require them to be a Levium just because they're writing.
Right.
They have to be a lady to write.
Some probably who was Captain Rashi, who maybe was even a marginal note from him. You know, he was not very, you know, very intelligent, whatever the right word is, not very bright. Figured it must have been Levium, and he put that down. Mm-hmm. And became assumed to be part of the text. And somebody was ridiculous.
That is fascinating. Do you remember those famous those ads? Didn't have to be Jewish to love Levi's bread.
Right.
Didn't have to be a Levi or a Levite to write a song. I guess maybe you can say it like that. So let's go and see what else. You know what? It's going to be so delicious. This Rashi coming up is really going to be something else. Let's go. Let me just read the English translation of the footnote and see what, if anything, the Rabbi Rosenberg adds to it. Eitan Heman Chalkol and Darda. He writes in the footnote, they were all brothers. This is Rashi. He translates Rashi. They were all brothers, the sons of Zerach, the son of Judah, as it says in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 6. Quote, the children of Zerach were Zimri, and Eitan, and Heman, and Kalkol, and Darau. So first of all, I don't have I don't have the Chronicles in front of me, but I got Zimri's name coming up.
Hmm.
I don't see Zimri, per se, in this pasuk. I'm just letting you know that I don't see Zimri. That's number one. Where is he in our pasuk? I don't see the name coming up. Instead, I see Eitan, Heman, Kalkol, and Darda. But now I'm being told about another man by the name of Daral. Now, I don't know how much fuss I should make out of that. Darda and Daral, I'm not going to weigh in on that one. But Zimri's name seems to be missing. So I'll take some thoughts, but this is what's going on over here. They were most likely very well known for their unusual wisdom. So says the Metzudas David. And we're sent to the very back of the book for a little footnote. So let's see if we can see it.
What did you say you didn't see?
The name Zimri in our pasuk.
In Rashi?
Rashi. Yeah.
Okay.
Mrs. Berlov, I know. I see it. I see it. My point is, in our verse over here in 1 Kings, they're listing, maybe I'm losing my mind, but when they're listing off the names of the brothers, here is the listing as the author of 1 Kings has it. He's got Eitan, the Ezrahite. He's got Heman, Kalkol, and Darda. Four men. Those are the four names that are coming up.
Sounds like whom?
B'nai Machol. Hold that thought. Whatever that name means.
In Dibri Hayamim it says B'nai Machol?
Over there it says the sons of Zerach, the son of Yehuda.
Okay.
As it says, I got to go see it. Shenemar, Uvene Zerach, Zimri, Eitan, Heman, Kalkol, and Daral. So says Rashi. You know, I really, I don't have our first. And over here it says Darda.
The same guy with two variations of his name.
Could be, right.
Like you have Shmuel and Shmulik.
Right.
Shmuel
and
Shmuel.
Right, Shmuel.
Whatever.
So Darda and Daral, we're going to probably say, okay, that's an overlapping thing. But where's Zimri? How come Zimri is not coming up in my listing of men here in 1 Kings? But his name apparently is coming up out there in Chronicles, in Divrei Yomim. I'm curious about that. What do you have, if anything, Mrs. Broff?
He's talking about the wise men. He's listing wise men here. Maybe Zimri wasn't one of the wisest men there, so he's not in this pasuk. It's not saying that these are the exclusive.
All right. Okay, I got to think about that a little bit. But let's also, and this is going to be interesting for Reb Berloff, because he made this point earlier. I think he was mechaven to this footnote. If you have the Rosenberg edition, excuse me, the Judaica Press, on page 482, all the way in the back of the book, here's what he says regarding your note earlier, Reb Berloff, about the Leviim. He writes, and this is what he writes, in all, quote, in all editions of Rashi, let that sink in all editions of Rashi, we find in parentheses, quote, they were singers of the tribe of Levi, end quote. This is apparently a mistake. Again, in all editions of Rashi, Rabbi Rosenberg writes, in all editions of Rashi, we find in parentheses the words, quote, they were singers of the tribe of Levi. Hayu Leviim Mishorim. Indeed, what appears in front of us in our text. Writes Rabbi Rosenberg, who's the editor of this volume, this is apparently a mistake. Although we do find Eitan and Haman mentioned in First Chronicles amongst the children of Gershon, the son of Levi, these four names are nowhere mentioned together other than by the children of Zerach, indicating that they are not the same.
Two
sets of...
They were actually cousins.
Eitan and Haman. Eitan was apparently, what, he was... wait a second. So let me see what am I to understand from this. When he says, we find the parentheses, these men were singers, Leviim Mishorim. He writes over here, Eitan, Haman, Kalkol, Darda, Achin Hayu, Bnei Zerach ben Yehuda. These four were brothers of Zerach ben Judah. As it says in Chronicles, Ubnei Zerach, Zimri, Ve'esan, Hayu Leviim Mishorim. In all editions of Rashi, those words, he says, gotta be a mistake. We do find Eitan and Haman mentioned in First Chronicles among the Bnei Levi. And these four names that we've got in front of us, the magic names Eitan, Haman, Kalkol, and Darda, those four names are not mentioned together anywhere other than the children of Zerach, who himself is a son of Yehuda, indicating that these are two different subgroups of people. Eitan and Haman, Bnei Levi, Eitan, Haman, Kalkol, and Darda, Bnei Yehuda.
I have another question.
You know I'm not going to be able to answer, but go ahead.
If Eitan is a brother of the others, why is he singled out as Rafi?
Yeah, that's a great question. If they're all Ezrachim, if they're all coming from Zerach, then why is singling out just the first man, Eitan? They're all Ezrachim. And it should be Haman, Ezrachi, Kalkol, you get the idea. It's a great question.
Well,
I knew I was going to know the answer.
Is it Ezrachi, and then with the other three is the sons of Machol.
Okay, so stay with us. Now we're going to try to get to it.
Maybe Eitan was so famous. Sometimes when somebody's famous, part of the title of fame comes with an appellation, like, Eitan the Ezrachite. And along with him, Nachschlep, not quite as famous, but also very brilliant, Haman Chakol Adara, Eitan the Ezrachite, the famous, and his brilliance too, those three, right.
But we're coming and saying that B'nai Machol, the others are the sons of Zerach, and here
it's the sons of Zerach, we're saying, and B'nai Machol, we didn't get to see what it means.
Okay, and maybe we have to wait for that Midrashic take on this. I think that the Midrash is going to show a little bit of light on the words Eitan HaEzrachi. So maybe that'll answer your question, Mrs. Berloff. Let's go right to it. If you've got the English translation, then let's go there. The sons of Machol. Or let's see the Rashi, right? Hayodim liyaseid mizmorim haamurim b'macholo shir Shayl Halavim Omrim Al Duchanam. These B'nai Machol, these are all B'nai Machol, the sons of Machol, but he's not translating B'nai Machol as Machol meaning a human being whose name is Machol. Rashi is going in a whole different direction. He's not translating literally right now. Of course, we're going to see in a moment, Rashi is in a little bit of a quandary, says Rabbi Rosenberg. At all events, these B'nai Machol, these four men, Eitan, Haman, Kalkol, and Darda, they knew how to arrange songs which were said, and they, the Macholo Shir, and the dancing thing, they knew how to make songs, danceable tunes. Lahavdo Mentuma La Tahara, like Dick Clark would say, and you can dance to it. It's got a good tune, and you can dance to it. Shayla Leviim Omer Malduchanam, and then these were the songs that the Leviim would say on the platform. Okay? And he continues, Mizmorim Sheyastu B'Sefer Tehillim. These were the Mizmorim that were, you know, put it, originated in, they were part of the establishment of the Sefer Tehillim, Maskila Eisen Ezrachi, Umaskila Haman HaEzrachi. One is Psalm 88, one is Psalm 89. Okay, hold that thought in 1 second. Hold the rest of the Rashi in abeyance for a moment. Take a look if you have the English translation, we're reading it. The sons of Machol, the name Machol in the text, writes Rabbi Rosenberg, at this point, Rashi found himself in a dilemma. In all of the family of Zerach, no one with the name of Machol is mentioned. He is compelled, therefore, to conclude that Machol is not a name, but a description. Quote, now he's quoting Rashi, they knew how to compose hymns which are said in dancing, end quote. Translating the word machol as dance, as a dance. The word machol suddenly means dance. They were songs, now back into Rashi is translating, they were songs which the Leviim said on their platform in the Beis HaMikdash, hymns which they composed in the Book of Psalms, like Maskil Eisen Ezrachi, Tehillim 88, and Maskil Haman Ezrachi, Tehillim 89. Hold that thought, because I do have a Sansino, and I wanted to see what Sansino had to say about this very issue. Watch what they write. I'll give you the whole thing. Quote, there is no record of any wisdom displayed by the four wise men who are named. Jewish tradition, however, associates men with, well, wait, giving it away. I don't want to give it all away just yet. And that, but this I do want to say. Eitan and Haman are probably not to be identified with the Levite musicians of those names. And you'll see that in 1 Chronicles chapter 6. We are not familiar yet with 1 Chronicles chapter 6, verses 18 and 29. But apparently the names Eitan and Haman come up as Levite musicians. Levi and Meshorim. That's interesting. That is fascinating. If they are Levite musicians with the name of Eitan and Haman, then maybe we're out of the woods. What do you say, Rabbi Broloff? If it's true, Zimri and Eitan over there now in Devar Yamim, they're quoting a different chapter and verse, and they're talking about Zimri and Eitan. Sansino is talking about chapter 6 and mentioning Eitan and Haman.
We don't have Tanakh here, do we? In this?
I don't have them. Maybe you have. Okay, now watch this. This is also fascinating. Sansino,
what?
1 Chronicles, Divrayim Aleph. This is where we want to go. Divrayim Aleph, chapter 6, verse 18 and 29.
First one is 18, yeah. Okay, so 18. Ve'ela ha'omdim u'b'neihem. I guess these are the ones who are standing as doing avoda mishkan, if it's a big dish or whatever. They and their children. Ve'b'nei ha'kahaki. from the sons of the Kahath branch of Levim, Haman Hamashoher, which is important for us, right? Mm-hmm. Haman the singer, or that's what it means, Ben Yoel Ben Shmuel. Oh, you know what? This is talking about the time of David.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, this is not anymore the grand, literal grandchildren of Yehuda or any of the Shevatim.
Okay.
It's several generations later.
Okay.
And then you have, okay, going back to, what's the second pasuk we want?
29.
Uvenei Merori Acheihem al Smo. And then the left side stood the other, another branch of the Levium, right, the Merori side, Merari, right, Eson ben Kishi ben Avdi. So there was an Eson there. So in other words, there were an Eson and the first one, the Haman, not brothers, but some sort of distant cousins from two different branches of the Levium, who were standing like by the, you know, where they gave the songs. Have to see the whole context of
right.
The parak. So that's it.
Okay, thank you, Shkayach. And the Sansino says, the Eitan that we see over here in 1 Kings and the Haman that we see here in 1 Kings are probably not identified with those psukim where those very names come up. Probably not the same because they have different fathers' names. And watch what he writes. Again, Eitan and Haman are probably not to be identified with the Levite musicians of those names, or the men mentioned in the superscriptions of Tehillim 88 and 89. So he is rejecting, Sansino is rejecting outright, there's no other way to read it, he's rejecting outright the idea that Eitan and Haman are the men who are associated with Tehillim 88 and Tehillim 89, which it seems to me is very clearly propounded as an idea by Rashi. Rashi seems to say that it's Eitan and Haman, 88 and 89. Those are the guys.
Well, the problem
is... Sansino versus Rashi.
Okay, but here's the problem with those Tehillim themselves. Maskil la'Eitan ha'ezrachi, Maskil la'Haman ha'ezrachi.
That means they were Levian.
All we know...
They wrote these...
Right.
I like it.
Sansino, he's saying... You're saying Sansino says that there's not these guys?
Right.
Which ones not these guys? The ones here?
Ones in our pasuk, but it has to be.
No.
No.
Does Sansino say these are not the Levites? Right? What does Sansino say?
Sansino says Eitan and Haman should not be identified with the Levite musicians of First Chronicles, and they should not be identified with the men mentioned in the titles of Tehillim 88 and Tehillim 89.
Very wrong. I think in the first should not be identified, he's correct. But what he says now, he is wrong.
Wow. That's something to say. that is an amazing claim to make.
Right,
because
at that point he's rejecting this, he's claiming that there are third set.
Yeah, I think so, right. I don't see where he's standing on that. Why don't you just go along with Rashi? Just go along. Why are you offended by that Rashi idea? That these men mentioned in Tehillim 88 and 89 are the very same. I'm not offended by it. They wrote songs. They wrote it after, they wrote in David's time, a little bit after David's time, at or around David's life, these men were apparently living. That's exactly the case, right? They were living in David's lifetime. And maybe beyond, maybe earlier, but in that time frame. So why would it be so strange for Sansino? Why was this Rashi so offensive to him that he says, I can't go along with that? Rashi says it beferish. She has to be safe at the hill, and maskela Eisen Ezrachi, and maskela Haman Ezrachi. And Mrs. Brohl, if you're troubled by the Haman Ezrachi, how come that title is not coming up over here? In our passage, you're saying. Is that bothering? No, it's not bothering you.
No, I'm saying, I'm arguing with Sansino, how could it not be, since we specifically have Eitan or Ezrachi in our passage.
Right.
And the Salem also calls him that, right?
Yes.
Right. He's all wet. I mean, he's he was ready to reject, he actually rejected the wands. And said, yeah.
Dr. Reverend Dr. I.W. Slotkey, got a master's degree and a doctor of literature. He's the guy.
It could also be a quote-unquote typo.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's the
editor is Reverend Dr. A. Cohen. He's got a master's and a PhD and a doctor of Hebrew literature.
Oh, Dr. Greg, how can we argue? We don't have
that. Can't argue with that man. He's the editor. He looked us over. This has got to be coming from the higher criticism.
Am
I crazy?
In your circles, volumes of the set still considered a culture by Mr. Present or not in your circles?
I never saw it given.
Okay, see, I am in Rochester. If you were in New York, I'm in Rochester. Maybe a time difference, it also may be a place difference. In Rochester, we had one Jewish bookstore, uh-huh. Where you registered, you know? Uh-huh. And among your Bar-Mitzvah guests, the ones that felt that you might have enough fountains, you probably had enough fountain pens without their giving you another one, you know. Cartridge pens are just coming in, so I suppose they could vary it that way, but they were a little bit more betuch kamim. They wanted you to deepen your commitment to Yiddishkeit.
Right.
So they would go into the Jewish bookstore, and like with a bridal register, maybe they still do it in forum stores, I don't know what sets. You know, this guy would pick out two volumes of the set you would, pay for, the guy three volumes, you know, and if you were missing a few, you could fill that in from your cash gifts, you know, and that's how you build up the sets of Shansinos. Not that many years later, when Haredim learned to speak English in America and learned to influence the up-and-coming Orthodox community, they more and more, Jewish Observer and similar venues, would say that this is not a kosher set. At the time, I didn't know that some of these names, not all of them, some may have been Orthodox at a Jewish college, but there were others, I believe that one of them was in Rockdale here as a rabbi. I flipped when I saw, I think his name as Rabbi Emeritus still in the 70s. Or I read the history of the shul that he had been deceased and he was still in the letterhead or whatever. I think is it Reichardt maybe who did some of them? Then I understood a little bit better why they said what they said. And that was the answer when Anspo started with their series, which I think older vendors, the Rosenberger series.
I think this goes back to the early 90s.
Right, exactly. So this to me is the best of the three English ones because it's in the middle. Hatsbro started from 76 on. It began with Esther, and uh-huh. then that was the very first one to be ready for Purim. I think maybe Purim 76. Probably when I came here for my first Prabha, someone asked me about it.
When did they do the Nevi'im Rishonim?
They continued. In other words, the first.
That was much later.
That one was much later. Which one? Much earlier than that.
Oh, really?
They started in 76 and continued to put out the volumes of Nach. They may have done the Megillahs first.
That's right.
Each one for its Yom Tov coming up, and then they continued generally. I think by the 80s, they were, out of all or most, were done.
Okay.
And this was a later one, which I think perhaps an unwritten subtext was to correct a major problem with the Art Scroll series. That is very skewed, that it's trying to basically build up a hashkafa, a Musar type of hashkafa, good for shmuzin and so on, by very selective quoting. Instead of trying at least the basic Rishonim to be given verbatim and then dealt with and integrated in the notes. On the other hand, Sansino that while he may quote traditionalists at times, he certainly any of the editors of the various or writers I could say of the volumes of Sansino had no reason to respect the authority of the traditionalists. So we have a strictly Orthodox rabbi, the Talmud of Rav Moshe, or he's from MTJ,
yeah.
who respects tradition 100%, and yet he's trying to present a more balanced, honest view of what the classical commentaries felt of the range rather than at school.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Thank you. So are we all in agreement that Rashi is finding himself in a dilemma, that the name of Machol is not coming up anywhere in Scripture? In all the family of Zerach, nobody with the name of Machol is mentioned. So therefore, he's got to come on to his particular reading, that it's all about they knew how to compose hymns, which were said in dancing. And then for Rashi, this is glot. It's absolutely glot, this pshat, because he then points out, he looks to Tehillim 88 and Tehillim 89 as his proof. You see that? That's exactly what I'm saying, he says. They were writers. They put words to music. They were singers. They were musicians. They were composers. And that's what's going on. And that's how you read the word B'nai Machol. Not that they were the children of Machol, which is what you see in the English in front of you in Judaica Press, the sons of Machol. Rather, it means these were musician men. They were composers. They knew how to make up hymns, which are said in dancing, and therefore, hence, Tehillim 88 and Tehillim 89. Where you see the names Maskil, Le'esan, Ezrachi, Maskil, Le'heman, Ezrachi, for Rashi it could not be any better, any clearer. I wasn't going along with that, but now I'm kind of grooving to it because I'm confronted by the Tehillim, and I don't know what else to say. I mean, if you don't see the name Machol coming up anywhere, what are you supposed to do? So he comes up with a pshat that is workable, and he's got some source for it in Tehillim 88 and 89. These people were writers, composers, musicians, whatever. They knew music, and they knew poetry, and they did it all like that. And it got into Tehillim. Well, what do you want? Pretty good. Now, we're going to drill down a little bit for the Midrash. Take a look at this. And maybe this will explain Eitan HaEzrachi, maybe. Take a look. In the Rashi, in the original Hebrew, we're going back for a second, then we'll do Rosenberg in English. Midrash Agada B'Psikta. Okay, Mikol HaAdam, what's pshat in the words, Solomon knew more wisdom, Mikol HaAdam, from all mankind. I mean, he was smarter than anybody. So what's pshat, Mikol HaAdam? Zeh Adam HaRishon, that's what that means. Mikol HaAdam means HaAdam, the man, the preeminent man, the man created by God himself. Solomon smarter than him. You like that? That's right. Shlomo was smarter than Adam HaRishon, who named all the animals in his Ruach HaKodesh, however that went down. He was that gifted. Shlomo eclipses him. How do you know? Because he's smarter Mikol HaAdam. And it gets even more impressive. Shlomo was smarter than Eitan HaEzrachi. Who's that? Ze'Avraham. Now, at this point, I think you're getting really dicey. Because Adam, I don't know. I mean, I can make an argument. Stuff that he said in front of God, Pashup Shad, very problematic. But that's another shear. But you're going to combine Adam, created by, I mean, allegedly, the Malcolm going, wow, who's that guy? Like, wow, that's worthy of respect. I mean, Avraham, too? Wow. Eitan Ezrachi, is not Avraham referred to as the Eitan? I mean, it's the Yerach HaEsanim, right? It's the month of Tishrei, is it not? Isn't it Tishrei? The month of the Esanim, the great the Eitan, the trees, the cedars, the big bold oak tree, whatever the word Eitan means, it's a certain kind of a tree, and that refers to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, right? I think so. That is what's going on over here for the rabbis. Eitan is a reference to the patriarchs, certainly Avraham. And the Ezrachi, doesn't that word Is it modern Hebrew? A citizen, preeminent citizen? Am I wrong? Am I crazy? How do you translate that word? That word.
Oh, how Ezrach for Yisrael.
Because every good standing member of the Jewish society. By Mitzvah Men and Up.
Well, right. Elsewhere, it's contrasted to a ger, so it probably means natural or pure, something like that. It's hard to define the parameters, but you're right. But Ezrachi does not necessarily mean Ezrachi, that he was an Ezrach. Ezrachi, it may be just a coincidental term. You know, if you're from New Jersey, people generally say you're from Jersey, right? If you're New York, you call New Jersey, Jersey. Doesn't mean you're wearing a jersey, right? And many, many other examples of that. You know, it may just be the same word used as a personal name and as a word. Yeah.
So, Rabbi Berloff, how would you translate, confronted by the words Eitan HaEzrachi, what is the Midrash getting at when they use that term? Obviously, the word Ezrachi is coming up in our Pasuk. What is the Midrash adding or getting at when they use that very same term in reference to Abraham? How is Abraham the Eitan HaEzrachi? How would you translate that? What's it adding to the word Eitan?
I'm not sure. I'd like to look at the Yom Kippur, maybe way off. At a Yom Kippur Machzor for Mincha, I believe the Karova, the part of the Piyut that starts, beginning of the Shatzer after Mitzvot, starts with the word Eisan. And I don't know what the word Eisan means there, but I would like to see what Art Scroll or others say if it might refer to Abraham there.
The Yerach HaEisanim, that is a very, very well known.
Oh, both.
All three of them.
Right. So I was going to.
But it'll be a particularly Abraham, interesting thing. Yeah.
Well, maybe if they're referring to Abraham as a son, then HaEzrachi as a prominent or native Jew, as you will, as being the first.
Preeminent.
And the first Jew, then he is a native born Jew. Mm-hmm. He's not a proselyte.
And yet he was...
He was proselytizing.
Abraham, you say?
Right.
But Abraham was born into, you know, of the Avodah Zarah. He came
right,
to it in his life.
He's number one, right? He's the first one.
Right, but he came to it, not born into it, having a father who was an Oven of Avodah Zarah, a Kohen to whatever was going on there.
But there was no one else to come from.
Uh-huh.
He's the first one.
Right.
Therefore, right. He gets that status.
I hear. I like that. That's right. I would go with that too. Thank you. Haman, who is Haman in our pasuk? Zem Moshe. Wow. And why I say that it means Moshe because of the phrase Raya Mehemna. That's all I got. Really, that's all I have. What are you getting? Haman is Zem Moshe, because Moshe Rabbeinu is described as the Raya HaMehemna in the Kabbalistic language and teachings. He is the trustworthy shepherd. He's the Raya HaMehemna. And that's about all my extent of the Kabbalistic, you know, knowledge. But that's how he's referred to. And those letters, Mehemna, you know, trustworthy, is coming up over here in the word Haman. So I like that teaching that Moshe, when you're talking about Haman, Zem Moshe, because Haman is echoing the idea in the Kabbalah of the Raya Mehemna. That's all I have on that. We continue.
I have a little, but that is Rachid. Yeah. The Piyut says, a son, hikir emunasecho. A son, whoever he was, recognized, you know, the faith in you. So the Aristotle explains, a son, the mighty, but in brackets, even the translation, he has in brackets, Abraham, recognize your truth. Abraham is called spiritually mighty because of his faith and heeding God's call to be told and going to Eretz Yisrael, and he quotes a Baba Basra 15a, which might be a place to go. Baba Basra 15a. I can look there next.
I sure appreciate your help, but we are. I'm going to keep going because I got an 8:30 deadline. We continue. Eisen Ezrachi is Abraham, Haman is Moshe, Kalkol is Yosef. Why would Kalkol be Yosef? Because he was Machalkel, the Jewish people and the Egyptian people during the drought, during the famine. So that would make perfect sense, that when you see the word, the name Kalkol, you know, oh, that looks a whole lot like the verb L'chalkel, and he's the Mechalkel to Egypt. Well, that works perfectly for me. So that's Joseph. The Darda, Zed Dor HaMidbar. That's the Dordea. That's the you know, the greatest generation, if you will, though they certainly slipped up here and there. And I quite understood why we... So, absolutely, 40 years worth. Still in all, that's the entire generation of the Dor HaMidbar. And Machol, and B'nai Machol, they are all B'nai Machol. What's shot with that? What does it mean? Shenimcha lehem al masa ha'egal. That is to say, they were forgiven for their making the egal azav, the golden calf. Although, yes, it's true, to some extent they were forgiven. I always thought that there's always a little snippet of punishment that gets thrown into us through the millennia, despite the fact that we've gotten some forgiveness. Still in all, it's pretty tough to get forgiveness for creating a golden calf near Mount Sinai as you're about to, or already did receive, or you've done it, just did get, where's Moshe, it's been 40 days, what's going on? Oh, we got to create a calf. And so they do that, and promiscuity, got craziness. And if you're not sure what's going on over there, watch the Ten Commandments. And yeah, okay, so you're going to say that they're nimcha, that they were forgiven. You know, maybe in the slightest way, that many of them got killed for what they did. They were executed, and oh my goodness, I'm still answering for it. But at all events, it's not my business now to weigh in on that per se. What we are saying is, midrashically, Shlomo was smarter than the first man created by God, smarter than Abraham, the patriarch, smarter than Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the Makabel HaTorah, having learned it from the Pi HaGevurah up in Shemayim. He was smarter than Joseph. He was smarter than an entire generation of Torah scholars, and those people were forgiven. Shlomo HaMelech was just greater than everybody who ever lived. Not just four men, he was greater than the greatest men. And that's all I got right now.
Thanks to the Aspo Master, this refers to Abubathra. Let's see, Omar Rav. Eisan Eisrachi Sehu Avram. How do we know that? Ksiv Hocha. Hocha means the Tehillim Pei Tes. Eisan Eisrachi. Ksiv Chosam. And it's written over there. Over there means Yishayahu Mem Aleph, which we have not seen yet, right? Mi heir mi mizrach tzedek. Who awakened from the east righteousness? Begomer. I don't know what the rest of the pasuk is. Apparently that's referring to Avraham. We have to look up Yeshayahu and see what he had. I haven't shown, but not the Mefarshim here. Yirmiyahu. Yeshayahu Mem.
So that's the Eitan Azrachi in Tehillim.
Right.
Avram Avinu wrote that.
Apparently, according to this, right. This is according to the Rav and the Gemara, at least. That is exactly right. I don't know what the...
That's where Santiel comes from.
Right. Isaiah 41:2. Here's a segment about the King Koyuma Palak. Malach Riyar, do you think for Chabot?
So Rashi's going against that Gemara and Baba Basra Lachora. For Rashi, these men, Haman, Kalko, whoever they are, Eitan, Haman, they are how they are. They are musicians, composers, and they wrote. Rashi makes no mention of the Gemara and Baba Basra. He makes no mention that Avram is actually, I mean, obviously he does it with the sixth over here, the measure. Yeah, but for Rashi, Pasha Pshat is that these men are who they are. And he doesn't make the connection that Eitan Ezrachi in Tehillim 89 is Abraham. He doesn't go that far. Rashi does not go down that path.
Well, he doesn't at the end?
Well, he's going to quote, he doesn't...
Well, not in his original Pshat, no.
Right.
Right,
but then
right,
in the Pshat,
right,
he mentions
right.
The Sikha. But he doesn't then tie it all up
neatly in a bow and say, and therefore, you know who the real author of 89 was? Abraham. He doesn't say that. And, you know, he could have quoted the Gemara in Bava Basra. He doesn't do it. So that's fascinating to me. Thank you for looking that up, Rabbi Grohl. That is great. And Blineda, I'm going to try to incorporate that, make a copy of that, and bring it in over here. So, ladies and gentlemen, how great is this? Yes, Solomon surpassed the exceptional wisdom of each of these. Adam,
whoever they are.
Moses, right. Whether it's Eitan or Haman, Kalkol, Dada, or Moses, Joseph, and Adam, and the whole Dordea, Shlomo surpassed them all. So Baruch Hashem, we spend a little bit of time on one pasuk, and that's how it is sometimes around over here. We knock it around, we see a Rashi, sometimes we see a Radak, and we enjoy it because this shiur is not necessarily quota-driven. This ain't locked in police department. Where you got to write a certain number of tickets and do a certain cooking every single night. You don't have to do that. Over here, we did one pasuk, and I hope and pray that with God's help, the Limud Torah was geschmack and enjoyable, and we saw some Gemaras and some Tanakh, and we saw the pasuk, and we saw Rashi, and we saw some Zeno. What could be better? So Baruch Hashem, we enjoyed. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got to talk to my people over here about rescheduling this class theoretically. Let me talk to Rabbi and Mrs. Burlov, and we'll be in touch through Jake and the callers and listeners about if there'll be a schedule change. We'll let you know. If there isn't any change, then there'll be no announcement. But I'm going to sign off right now, and I want to wish everybody a very good, healthy, happy rest of the week. Wishing everybody a good Shabbos, and enjoy, and have a very successful rest of the week. Take care and be well. Bye-bye.
As I said before, Sunday night,